Hi, and welcome to Book Echoes, the podcast on all things writing and illustrating for kids and teens. I'm YA author Connie B. Dowell. Today, I'm doing something a little different. I usually interview authors, but things have been kind of hectic getting my latest YA historical mystery, Dead Man's Jazz, out the door to the copy editor, which I did on Monday. Yay! So I've not started scheduling my summer interviews yet, but rather than miss a bi-weekly episode, I'm going to take this time to do a solo episode and share with you all some lessons I learned about working conventions or things like book fairs, local festivals, and other tabling opportunities and hand-selling books from my experience a few weeks ago at Comic Palooza here in Houston. So here's some things that I learned. Let's start with the prep work. First thing, register early. These things sell out really fast, especially big shows like Comic Palooza. I got on the email list for updates before they had opened for registration, and I'm really glad. I registered within a couple of hours of the site being open for exhibitors who hadn't exhibited at Comic Palooza before. It sold out pretty quickly in like 2 or 3 days, but because I got on the list for updates and I went ahead and registered early, I had no trouble picking a table and getting the one that I wanted. The next thing to prepare is things like taxes and forms. Work out in advance of the show what forms you're going to have to fill out and send back or bring with you to the show, and how setup and parking is going to work. It was complicated, even though I had looked up everything ahead of time, but if I hadn't, it would have lost me lots of setup time. There was a lot of complicated rules on where to go, how long to move your car there, that kind of thing. Trying to figure that out the day of, man, that would have been a pain. There also may be a deadline by the time, there may be a deadline in which to claim your table. So make sure that you're there on time. In my case, if I hadn't been there by noon of the first day of the show, somebody could have bought the table out from under me. But I was set up 2 hours in advance of that deadline and an hour before VIP attendees could get on the floor, so I could relax. I had time to look around a little before the show started. You'll also want to know what your booth space is going to look like. A lot of big shows will provide a table. They may even have a tablecloth for you. But I've also done some small things like local festivals where I had to provide the table myself. And if you don't know that ahead of time, you are out of luck when you get there. In the case of Comic Palooza, I wish I had known better what the space was going to look like. It was much more extensive than I had imagined, and they had a table skirt for me. So I didn't really need to bring my tablecloth at all, and I could have saved myself the packing space. It also changed the way that I had to set up my table banner, and it turned out okay. I had clips in the right places. But again, I would have changed what I brought if I'd known that, and if I'd been unlucky, I might not have been able to really get the banner up nice and sturdy the way I wanted it. One thing I would have done differently if I had known the size of the space is I definitely would have brought a lot more signage. There were some exhibitors that had pretty large displays of items, really big colorful signs, really utilizing that space around and behind the table. But I had never been to this show before, so I kind of assumed that we would be squeezed in a little tighter and that I'd be really backed up against another exhibitor. But that wasn't the case at all. If I'd known what the space looked like, I would have made my area a lot more attractive to potential readers. And that's something that I probably could have looked up before the event. So just so you know, that's totally a fail on my part. I probably could have looked that up. I probably could have asked someone coordinating the exhibitors before the event to really get an idea of the space. Now, don't forget in your preparations to look at your local or state tax laws. There are some festivals and conventions that are going to require you to submit your state tax ID number before you can even register or before the date of the show. Others, you know, it's up to you to do that. They don't police it. Now, some people think that they can go under the table and get away with it, but I will tell you what Comic Palooza warned all of us exhibitors. Tax officials do frequent these events. So yeah, you might get away with it, or you might get caught and left with a pretty big fine. It's really just best to do your homework and look at your local tax laws and know what you're supposed to do and then do it. So the next bit of preparation is to know your market. This is a bit of advice that I would tell anybody getting ready for a show, but it's also a bit of advice that I intentionally ignored myself. I knew that this market was maybe not the best for my kind of books. Obviously, the optimal kind of book to bring to a comic convention would be a comic or a graphic novel. Anything illustrated. Any kinds of illustrated books, even certain kinds of picture books, might do really great. And for novels, for text-based books, anything superhero-themed would really be on target. And even things that maybe science fiction or fantasy would probably find a pretty big market. My historical mysteries? Well, they're not exactly on the nose for that market, but I decided to do it anyway. I wanted to try a really big show in 2019 so that I could work on my hand-selling game and work on putting together a really focused table and getting those skills. And Comic Palooza is local to me. I didn't have to travel, which I would never recommend anybody travel to do one of these events. You know, make sure it's something that you can drive to in a day. So it's local to me, and it's also huge. In 2018, they had more than 52,000 attendees over a three-day period. I don't know how many came this year, but it was a ton. So my thinking was, odds are in a crowd that size, I'm going to find some people who are my target market. But the thing is, I don't do just one thing. If I had felt my illustration skill was more up to par and then I had more illustrated products ready to be produced and sold, that's the direction I would have gone. Because that's really more what the market is looking for at this kind of show. I also wish I had taken time to get more stock of my writing prompt playing cards. It's something that I would have had to really plan a bit more in advance. I would have had to adjust the pricing so that it was still profitable for me to do this and order in bulk. And I probably would have changed the focus of my table. But if I'd had those ready to go and a lot more nonfiction for writers, that would have been really on target too, because Comic Palooza has a big writing track with a lot of panels and presentations specifically for writers. So that would probably have been a much more profitable area than trying to sell my YA historical mysteries. But ultimately, I really had to pick a focus, and that's the focus I went with. So that's part of knowing your market, is looking at the kinds of events and possibly the kinds of tracks that they have at this particular convention, and then knowing the kinds of people who go to those events, the kinds of interests that it's attracting. The next thing is to know your fellow exhibitors. If the website for your event lists them, like Comic Palooza did for us, you can scope out your fellow exhibitors before the actual event. I looked at the list online for Artist's Alley, and that's where they put people selling books. We were in Artist's Alley. And I looked specifically at people selling books, and I scoped out their websites to see what genres would be represented and target the people that I knew I wanted to visit and network with during the show. And that's what I did. It also helped me know how to position myself when I was designing my table. I looked at the other genres, and I was the only author selling mysteries. There were a few small presses represented, and they may have had some mystery novels among their offerings, but I was the only individual author selling mysteries at this particular convention. So that was the angle that I played up. Because it's popular enough genre, I figured in a large crowd, I'm going to find some mystery lovers. And about connecting with others, I came home with a stack of business cards of new connections to catch up with. That's the other thing. Don't just meet these people once at the event. Make sure you stay in touch later through social media or a follow-up email. You can also make connections just from people stopping by your table. Media folks often attend these events. I connected with some bloggers just by having a table and a visually attractive sign to get people to come over. I even got interviewed on a podcast on the spot while I was tabling at the event. I will put the link in the show notes if you guys want to check it out. It was for a podcast called Kyle Gets Conned. And this guy, Kyle, goes to these conventions and interviews people who are exhibiting. And then he posts the episode. It's like 1 or 2 minutes an interview. Pretty quickly. So people who are attending the event can find something they're interested in and then go over to the table. And things like this is on the spot meetings and interviews and connections. That's something you're only going to get by having a table at an event like this. Next up, tip, have a buddy if possible. If you can, try not to have to run the table all by yourself, even if you don't have a lot of heavy stuff to set up. The fact is, at some point in the day, you're going to need to go to the bathroom. You're probably going to want to get something to eat and drink. And you might just want to have someone to talk to. I was really glad that on the second day, my husband could join me at the table. It took some of the pressure off. And it was also helpful for sales. Sometimes someone else talking up your book, they can do it better than you can. And it was good to have backup. So if you can, try to get a spouse or a friend to join you, or better yet, partner with another author or illustrator and split the cost of the table. Then not only do you get a buddy, you save some money and maybe make the event more profitable for you. The final aspect of preparation for your is actually designing your table and ordering your stock, making sure it all fits in containers you can actually carry around and set up either by yourself or with a helper. We covered a little bit of that in terms of choosing your focus based on the audience of the show and researching the size and setup of your booth. But parking is also going to be a determining factor here. If you can park close, either for the whole show or for loading and unloading, that's going to make life way easier. But if parking is far away and there's really no helping it, make sure you've got stuff that can fit in a rolling suitcase or two so you're not struggling to carry heavy boxes for a couple blocks. As I mentioned before, if you do a lot of things like me, like I make a lot of stuff, finding your focus is really important. And it's something I felt I did poorly at other tabling events that I was part of. I tried to sell all my books and my writing prompt playing cards and my illustrated mugs and get people on the email list. And all those things drew different kinds of people to the table, and it just looked confusing. Attendees need to know at a glance what this table is about and what you would like them to do. Ideally, that would be buy a book or sign up for your email list. Even more ideally, I suppose, both. Those are the real things you want them to do. You want them to, this is about books, get on the email list, keep buying books. So it's really good to focus on a single book or a single series. But even if you write a lot of standalones that are kind of concentrated in one genre, you can focus on a single genre. But rather than going, oh, this is science fiction, oh, this is mystery, it's you've got your other stuff kind of set to one side, but your table has one big focus. Definitely bring your other stock, some of your other stock, but focus in one area so that people don't feel like it's all over the place. And absolutely push that email list. Make sure that you have a nice, clean piece of paper where people can write down their name and their email address, and that it's clearly labeled as your newsletter email list. And it's also good to have, I had bookmarks with, you know, nice shiny pictures of my books and a link where people could sign up online, but they really seem to like that piece of paper much better. I can track who's coming from the event for online signups, and I've not gotten that many. People really preferred to sign up in person. Though, by all means, do bring a bookmark or a book card of some kind where people can sign up with for your email list later, either with a link that they can type in or a QR code. Some people like to do QR codes and kind of walk the reader through while they're at the table. Here, you just scan your phone like this, and that might actually get more signups than a link they have to type in. But you don't want to be too pushy. And so again, you know, have that physical sign up and then have bookmarks that people can walk away with. Another tip regarding bookmarks and other freebies, if you've got business cards, and you absolutely should, so that you can hand those out to other authors, people in media, just general connections that you make, have them. Don't have them kind of front and center at your table. Maybe move them a little bit to the back or even kind of hidden. Because I found when my business cards were right next to my shiny bookmarks, you know, the ones with the link to sign up for the newsletter, people grabbed the business card and ignored the bookmark. I don't know if they thought the bookmarks were for sale or something, but maybe just because people are so used to grabbing business cards, that's what they went for. But of course, my business cards are designed for other kinds of connections, not for readers. They're, you know, here's my website, here's my email address, and if not, here's sign up for my newsletter. So that's not what I wanted them to take. So I moved them when I realized that's what people were doing. Now, circling back to having a focus and letting that determine your signage and what you got on your table, consider less expensive signage or something that you can change things out of, something where you can slide pieces of paper in and out, or a large foam board where you could tape large print paper to, rather than really expensive signage. If, like me, you have a lot of things that you focus on, and each event might need to be tailored to a different focus. So, you know, if I'm focusing on my historical mysteries, I'm going to want my signs to look one way. If I'm focusing on the writing prompt playing cards, I'm going to need a different signage. But, you know, I might not want the really big, expensive sign for each individual focus when I could just get a large piece of foam board and it's cheaper to just print new stuff, tape it to the foam board each time. Now, when it comes to table banners, that's, you're probably just going to have to get like three or four different table banners if you've got three or four different things that you need to focus on, and change them out depending on what you're doing, depending on the show. Fortunately, table banners are pretty cheap if you do the indoor vinyl. And you really don't need outdoor vinyl. Even if your show is outdoors, you're only going to be there for, you know, a few hours, for a day or two. It's not going to be hanging outdoors all the time. My indoor vinyl was about $13. So, you know, I can have a couple of those and just change them out as needed. Finally, one thing that everyone is going to want to have at their table is hand sanitizer. It's a little bit of a cliche, but everyone who goes to a convention will tell you, wash your hands, use hand sanitizer. People are gross. They will cough and sneeze on their hands, and then they will shake your hands, and you don't want that. It's really gross. So try to stay healthy. All right, now let's come to what to do when you're actually there at the event, interacting with people. Yay! So first up, even though there may be quite a bit of downtime, it's important to remember you are working the entire time that you're there. So don't spend your time writing, which is a real temptation for writers. But if you're writing, if you're playing with your phone, if you're reading a book, people aren't going to come up to your table because you look busy. So you need to be looking up, looking at people, looking for someone who makes eye contact, who slows down, who's looking at your sign. And when you've got someone who is a little interested, try to hook them in with a conversation starter. So my conversation starter was, do you like mysteries? And then that invites the person to come a little closer and talk about the mystery books that they enjoyed. There goes my iPad that I am reading my notes from. Oops. Anyway, to talk about the mystery books that they enjoyed. And if they don't like mysteries, then they just say, sorry, it's not my genre, and move on. But if someone looked interested but maybe was kind of moving fast, I could also just say, would you like a bookmark? Then maybe they'll come to the table and look a little closer, or maybe they'll just take the bookmark and go on their way, but they probably wouldn't have taken the bookmark if I hadn't explicitly offered it. These are just little things. These are little things you can do. Some people are really comfortable with in-person sales. They like to stand in front of their table and stop people as they go by. But a lot of us are not into that. So you can reach out in small ways and get people who are a little bit interested, maybe a little bit shy, not comfortable enough to just walk right on up and ask questions, to actually stop and look over your books, or take a bookmark or a flyer and come look you up later. Another great conversation starter is if you, like me, are at a show where people dress up, that conversation starter is like automatically given to you. So start talking about the character they're dressed up as, or the show or movie or book that the character's from. I had one woman walk by my table and she was dressed as Marie Antoinette. That was an instant in. We could talk about her costume. Obviously the hook is, you clearly like history. Do you like historical fiction? You know, we had a conversation, her and me and my husband, and she actually bought one of my books. Having a buddy does help with this as well, getting these conversation starters. Sometimes, you know, you don't feel like reaching out. You get a little tired. And two heads are better than one in terms of hooking people in and getting conversations going. Now, when you do get someone to buy a book, don't forget to sign. This is something that Steve actually had to remind me a few times. I would get so excited that someone was buying my book that I would entirely forget to offer to sign the book. But that's a real mistake, because it's one of the real benefits for the reader in buying a book at a show like this, is that they can get a signed copy and meet the author. And that's pretty cool. Okay, so let's talk about some things to watch out for. Number one, know your limits. Just because a show is open for a certain period of time doesn't mean you have to stay the full time. I went home early on the first day. I was probably the first exhibitor to leave, but I had small kids at home. The show floor was open until 8 o'clock, but if I waited till 8 o'clock to leave, I'd be getting home well after my kids' bedtime. And also, I had a whole nother day to do. I was just tired. We also left early on the second day because we reached a point where all the activity was starting to be a little bit overwhelming, and I felt like we'd done what we came to do. If you're particularly introverted, you might really hate this and you might tire out pretty quickly, and that's okay. Don't stay if you really want to go. It's okay to leave. You don't have to stay the full time just because you paid the whole fee. So Steve was getting kind of tired of the experience by mid-afternoon on the second day, the day that he came with me. And I was getting tired because it had been 2 full days by that point. So we left early and we got to have some dinner with just the two of us before we picked up our kids. The show was even open the following day. Yes, on Mother's Day. But we did not go back. I spent Mother's Day with my family. I'd had 2 days of tabling at the show, and I didn't need to come back. The next thing to watch out for is that when you're in a situation where you're facing the public, you're going to get some weird reactions. Anyone who's worked in customer service knows this. There's going to be some people who are just extra chatty and they just take up a lot of your time without necessarily leading to sales. You're also going to inevitably attract some aspiring writers, period. Sometimes this is great. Sometimes you make great connections this way. But sometimes people just want to take up your time talking about their own work. And it can get a little awkward. So don't feel like you have to sit and chat and be a therapy session for them forever, comma. If you feel like being helpful, you can always give them your business card and follow up later. You may also just get some really odd comments. One of the times I started my conversation with, "Do you like mysteries?" I got a pretty odd response, an odd response I wasn't expecting. The person said, "No, I like to know how things are going to turn out." I'm not really sure what she meant by that, because I feel like you're not supposed to know how exactly a story ends. That's kind of the point of stories. I don't know if maybe she got mixed up and thought I was talking about like a cliffhanger in a story instead of the genre of mystery. Because even though you don't know exactly how the mystery ends, you do pretty much know that you're going to, you know, find whodunit by the end. You know, that's just a genre convention. But there you go. misunderstandings happen, and sometimes you just get strange responses. So be ready and aware and ready to roll with the punches. Now, the next thing I'm going to warn you about is probably never going to happen to you, but it's something you should be prepared for. You may get some odd or confrontational responses that might feel kind of dangerous. So before the show, I recommend looking over the information that the show provides you on how to get in touch with security if it ever becomes necessary. Also, fortunately, you're going to have other exhibitors around you. So if a situation starts to get scary, you've got someone nearby you can turn to and ask for them to get security. Now, again, this is pretty rare. And I've only once had a situation where I thought I might want to get security involved. And fortunately, it didn't get to that point. Unfortunately, it was my very first tabling event. As an author, I had only been published for about a month at that point. And that might have been enough to scare other people off doing tabling events like this. Apparently not me, but yeah, so that's something that happened. And I'm going to tell you what happened to me. So I was promoting my first book at a local festival, and the book it's a nonfiction book for new college students about academic writing. And I had someone come to my table and started asking questions about how English is taught and getting a little bit argumentative, and why don't we change English so that it's spelled phonetically? And I gave him lots of polite, okay, let's agree to disagree, and in the conversation, but he wasn't taking it. And eventually he started overtly asking what my politics were, and he clearly had an agenda. He did not want to talk about writing. He did not want to talk about teaching English. He had some other agenda going on in mind. And the thing is, people like this, they just want to have a confrontation that they can reflect on and feel good about themselves later. They want to create a scenario where, in their mind, they're the hero of a debate. But that's not right. A real debate happens when both parties respect each other and abide by the rules of civil conversation, if not actual formal debate. When people come up and get confrontational at your table and claim they're trying to have an argument or a debate with you, that's not a real debate. It's not a real argument. There's no argument to win because they've already won in their own mind. They're just pushing you to get a reaction and make themselves feel special. So my advice to you is it's okay to ask them to leave. You haven't lost the argument by asking them to leave and refusing to engage with them. You haven't made your position look weak. You haven't made yourself look weak. You're protecting yourself because it's not a real argument. It's not a real debate. It's bullying. You don't have to listen to that. You don't have to talk to anybody because they're standing in front of your table. Like I said, it's extremely unlikely that this will ever happen to you, but you know, it's good to be prepared in case it does. And I really hope this story hasn't put anyone off tabling. And I think the older version of me would have some very choice words for this dude if he came back, followed by go away. So that would be the big one, was go away. And if you don't go away, I will call for security. And then I would call security. Anyway, so now all is said and done and the event is over. You might be wondering, would I do it again? And the answer is a little bit complicated. For one, it's unlikely I'll ever be doing Comic Palooza specifically again, as our family is moving to Virginia this summer. And I would never recommend that anyone make a trip out of state for a convention or a book fair like this. Unless you're a huge name author, you're just not going to make your money back. The intangible benefits are not worth the expense of the trip. But would I do a different convention? Well, it all depends. Comic Palooza was big, and consequently, it was pretty expensive. I went into it knowing I probably wouldn't make my money back. What I was doing was working on my hand selling game and really hoping for newsletter signups. But I didn't get the newsletter signups I was really hoping for. I got some, but I was kind of disappointed in the results. Part of being in a big convention is that you're going to get people for all kinds of niches. That's what I was banking on. There's so many people here. There's bound to be my target audience. But the other thing is, there are so many people there that there were so many people there. It was just so much stuff to look at. There was people everywhere. There was so much going on. It was easy to have your eyes just kind of glaze over as you went from one thing to the next. And I think that's what a lot of attendees did. There's so much trying to attract your attention that you just block it out. So my mystery readers, they might have been there. I think they probably were. They may have walked right by my table and been too overwhelmed to spot me. Now, when it comes to smaller events or genre-specific events, that's a different story. I will definitely be on the lookout for book fairs for young adult fiction, historical fiction, or mysteries. Somewhere I'm going to find my target audience in large numbers, and somewhere I'm going to find people who are in the mood to buy books. I may also consider some smaller events that are mixed genre. I've done local author events hosted by a local library in the past, and I didn't make very much, but that didn't matter because the table was free. So if the expense is pretty low, I'm willing to take the time for an event. And of course, if I ever get a graphic novel off the ground, I'll definitely consider doing another comic convention, even a pretty big one, because then I'll have something that's really targeted to what people are looking for. So that was my experience. I think I learned a lot, and I think I've got some skills that I'll take to a much more targeted event later. And maybe this has helped some of you guys who are considering renting a table at a convention or a book fair or festival. So in 2 weeks, I will be back with a new episode and I'll be back to author interviews. I'm scheduling them right now. So if you are an author who is interested in interviewing, if you're an author of children's or young adult literature, who's interested in interviewing, please email me at connie@bookechoes.com and let me know. Until next time.
Thanks so much for listening to the Book Echoes podcast. You can find the podcast at bookechoes.com, on Apple Podcasts, or on Stitcher. And I would really appreciate it if you enjoyed the podcast to leave a review at one of those places or leave a comment on the show notes at bookechoes.com. Thank you.